This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 10th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 133. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and Pacific Northwest, the Is It Just Me commentary, the Big Deal feature, the commissioner of the Canadian Football League gets a rough ride when he throws a Hail Mary and asks for a $150 million bailout amid the coronavirus pandemic. Plus, I'll award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those making a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or why is it so difficult for the world to acknowledge Taiwan? Abbotsford Conservative MP Ed Fast challenged Foreign Affairs Minister François-Philippe Champagne to thank Taiwan for donating 500,000 masks to hospitals in British Columbia. Listen to this exchange.
This question is directed to the Minister of Foreign Affairs. On March 28th, he personally tweeted out a thank you to the People's Republic of China for donating PPEs to Canada. This tweet happened within 3 hours of China announcing that gift. Now, as it turned out, many of these PPEs were defective and could not be used. More recently, Taiwan donated 500,000 surgical masks to Canada. And yet here we are, 2 weeks later, and the minister has yet to personally thank Taiwan for its generosity. Will the minister now thank this free and democratic country for its generous gift to Canadians?
The Honourable Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to thank my colleague for the question. Indeed, we are very grateful to every nation for helping Canada. This is a global pandemic which knows no border. We have been expressing our thanks to many nations who have contributed. We will continue to do so. It is important at a time of pandemic, Mr. Speaker, that we don't play politics, that humanity comes together. I can say to my COVID foreign minister's call, the world community has come together to make sure that we would make sure that supply chain would remain intact, that we would have transit up, that we would have air bridges. And we will continue, Mr. Speaker, to work with every nation when it comes to health. This is a public good that we want to work together with.
We will go back to Mr. Fast now.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I didn't hear a thank you there, so I'm going to try again. On May 4th, the government of Taiwan delivered 25,000 surgical masks to the government of British Columbia. On hand were BC's Minister of Citizen Services, Ann Kang, and Minister of State for Childcare, Katrina Chen, who, as ministers, officially thanked the government of Taiwan for its donation. Again, will the minister now do the right thing and, on behalf of Canadians, recognize the generosity of Taiwan and thank its government for that timely donation?
The Honourable Minister.
Mr. Speaker, as I said to you before, Canada is grateful to all who have given supplies to Canada. This is a common endeavor. We are thankful. We are grateful.
Fast may have had an impact as the Trudeau Liberals suddenly say they will now support Taiwan gaining observer status at the World Health Organization, the United Nations body which has been seen as too friendly to the communist regime in Beijing. While Champagne dared not speak the name of Taiwan, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau did. On May 8th, he said that he was thankful for Taiwan's donation. Taiwan has handled the pandemic better than most countries in the world. It shut its borders early to travelers from mainland China, something that Canada refused to do. Dr. Bruce Aylward, a Canadian from Newfoundland, is a senior official with the World Health Organization, and he has resisted requests to appear in front of a House of Commons committee. Aylward famously hung up on a Hong Kong reporter who asked him about the Taiwan issue. Canada does not officially recognize Taiwan, despite the island nation being a self-governed democracy and a trading partner. Canada and Taiwan did more than $7.8 billion of business with each other in 2018. Canada has had diplomatic ties with China since October 1970, when the Prime Minister was Pierre Trudeau, who went there in 1973 and 3 years later denied Taiwan's participation in the Montreal Olympics because Taiwan refused to stop calling itself the Republic of China. Trudeau II famously said that he admired China's quote-unquote basic dictatorship. Meanwhile, yet another PPE scandal involving mainland China. A shipment of 8 million shoddy N95 masks from China was rejected by the feds. The names of the Chinese manufacturer and the Montreal supplier have not been disclosed. AMD Medicom is the Montreal company that was given a no-bid contract by the feds for a made-in-Canada solution. The deal, which has not been released, calls for 20 million N95 masks and 24 million surgical masks a year for the next 10 years. Guess who is Medicom's subcontractor? Another company from Montreal you may have heard of before called SNC-Lavalin. ConstructConnect.com reported May 7th that the scandal-plagued company that the Trudeau Liberals helped keep afloat is working on Medicom's new plant. This happened after Chair Kevin Lynch announced his resignation from SNC-Lavalin at the company's AGM, where the company also revealed it could leave Quebec in 2024 after it pays off a $1.5 billion loan to the Quebec Pension Fund. So, the Trudeau Liberals found yet another creative way to indirectly give SNC-Lavalin, their good old friends, a boost. What do you think? Email bob@thebreaker.news.
You gotta do what?
What?
Dr. Henry said, we're gonna have to wait to vaccinate. So just stay strong and sing this song. You gotta wash your hands. Don't touch your face.
John Mitchell and his Vancouver independent single, Do What? Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In ABC News Australia, crowds swarm to shopping centers as coronavirus restrictions begin to ease, causing alarm over lack of social distancing. Large crowds descended on shopping centers from Sydney to Perth. One shopper at Westfield Burwood in Sydney described the atmosphere as bananas. Others described it as busier than Christmas. The Australian Retailers Association said the reports of crowding were worst in New South Wales and Victoria. Its head said that they wanted a safe restart, not a false start, but they were waiting for the green light from state governments before a full reopening. Meanwhile, Australia's Prime Minister is accused of misleading Parliament over the $100 million community sport infrastructure grants scandal, otherwise known as the sports rorts, rorts being another word for fraud. Yonhap in the Korea Times. North Korean leader sends congratulatory message to Putin. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un sent a message to Russian President Vladimir Putin on the occasion of the 75th anniversary of the end of World War II in Europe, the North State News Agency reported. The message came just days after Kim received a commemorative medal from Putin on the occasion of the 75th anniversary of Russia's victory in the war, known as the Great Patriotic War. Kim and Putin held their first summit in April 2019 in Vladivostok. Victor Ting in the South China Morning Post, biggest ginseng seizure in Hong Kong history nets $6 million worth of traditional medicine from seagoing smugglers. Police and customs swooped when they spotted a fishing vessel transferring more than 1,000 boxes to speedboats off Lantau Island. Seven men aboard the larger ship were arrested, though officials were unable to intercept their speedboats as they headed for mainland China. By dollar value, the seizure was 10 times bigger than the previous record from February of this year. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Those were the voices of Katrina Chen and Bowen Ma, with music by Bob Deeth, covering Avril Lavigne's Keep Holding On. All three are BC NDP MLAs. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines from around the Pacific Northwest. Jeff Manning in the Oregonian. In the midst of pandemic, Oregon hospitals cut workers' pay, require furloughs. Legacy Health notified employees last week that it will require nearly 6,000 of them to take temporary pay cuts or 10 to 15 day furloughs, or both. Other hospitals, big and small, have instituted similar cuts just weeks after the first wave of COVID-19 began to taper off. Quote, 3 weeks ago, they were putting up signs. You're the hero. They even threw us a parade, said Eric Quinn, a CT scan technician at Peace Health Southwest Medical Center in Vancouver, Washington. Quote, and now it's more like, you're done, go home, we don't need you anymore. Rod Hockman, head of Providence Healthcare's entire seven-state system, received total compensation of $10 million last year. Mike Carter in the Seattle Times. Snohomish County will not pay for sheriff's legal defense and recall effort over his refusal to enforce state's stay-home order during pandemic. Sheriff Adam Fortney will have to pay for his own defense against a recall petition filed after he publicly defied Governor Jay Inslee's stay-home, stay-safe response to COVID-19, according to a letter written by County Prosecutor Adam Cornell. While acknowledging that the virus is deadly, he stated that the impacts of COVID-19 no longer warrant the suspension of our constitutional rights. The same day Fortney met maskless with reporters at police headquarters in Everett, Monroe resident Lori Shavlik filed a petition with the city auditor seeking to recall Fortney, a 23-year veteran sheriff's patrol sergeant who took office in January after defeating incumbent Ty Trenary. In Czech news, 101-year-old Oak Bay War veteran exceeds fundraising goal. John Hillman, a veteran of the Second World War and a Burma Star holder, has been walking five laps around his Oak Bay residence each day since May 4th in an effort to reach 101 laps and raise $101,000 for Save the Children Canada's COVID-19 Relief Fund. The milestone fittingly occurred on the 75th anniversary of Victory in Europe Day. It also came 5 days into Hillman's campaign, which is due to end by June 30th. Hillman was inspired by Captain Tom Moore, the 99-year-old British veteran who raised more than £32 million. And these headlines this week in the Breaker.News. Coronavirus closed United Poultry failed WorkSafe BC inspection. All is not well at Surrey City Councillor's Wellness Center. Elections BC keeps report on BC Liberal MLA Stewart secret. Read the stories behind these headlines. Go to thebreaker.news. Come on and roar, you lions, roar. That's what a lion's roar is for. From the mountains to the sea, you are the pride of all BC. Roar, roar, buckle down. The Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast.
Turning then to Commissioner Ambrosi with the Canadian Football League. The floor is yours.
There may not be a 108th Grey Cup game in 2020. The entire Canadian Football League season could be lost to the coronavirus pandemic. Commissioner Randy Ambrosi appeared at the virtual meeting of the House of Commons Finance Committee on May 7th to plead for a bailout from taxpayers. He said the league needs as much as $150 million to stay alive if the 2020 season is cancelled. Ambrosi is offering free advertising to the government in return. Last year's Grey Cup on TSN and RDS drew a total audience throughout the day of 9.6 million Canadians. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers win peaked at 4.6 million viewers. While the game remains strong on the prairies, Toronto and Vancouver are weak markets. The BC Lions drew just 16,233 fans for last July's visit from the Saskatchewan Roughriders in a stadium with a capacity of almost 55,000. The Lions already enjoy a sweetheart rent deal at taxpayer-owned BC Place. The NFL, coincidentally, announced its 2020 schedule on May 7th. While the NFL can survive a season without fans in the stands, the CFL cannot. The $50 million a year TV deal with TSN isn't enough. Case in point, the BC Lions had more than $17 million in revenue for 2015, the year after they hosted Grey Cup at BC Place. They took in nearly $8 million from ticket sales, which is more than TV, radio, and sponsorship revenue combined. This is Ambrosi's opening statement to the committee.
I appear here on behalf of the Canadian Football League and the Grey Cup, which has been a source of Canadian unity and celebration since 1909. The CFL is a valuable and integral part of Canadian life, and its future is very much in jeopardy, and would be terribly sad if this pandemic were allowed to take it away. Ours is a big brand, but not a wealthy business. Collectively, our teams lose between $10 and $20 million a season. We survive because of the passion of our fans, the dedication of volunteers who guide our community-held clubs, and the civic philanthropy of the people who own and subsidize our privately held teams. Our players are world-class athletes and first-class people. Their devotion to charity and community is second to none, but the salary of NBA superstar Steph Curry is equal to the salaries of all of our players combined. Our product is football, but what we really do is bring Canadians together. 2 million Canadians buy tickets to our games each year. When our players go into the community to talk about violence against women or bullying or food banks, they draw a crowd. Bringing people together makes us great, but in a pandemic, it makes us vulnerable. Because the first thing to go and the last thing to come back is large gatherings, and large gatherings is the lifeblood of the CFL. Unlike large US-based leagues, our biggest source of revenue is not TV, it's ticket sales. Governments coping with COVID-19 for reasons of public health that we totally support have made it impossible for us to do what we do. Our best case scenario for this year is a drastically truncated season, and our most likely scenario is no season at all. We are currently operating on the money our fans and to a lesser extent the broadcasters and sponsors pay us in advance for games. The day is fast approaching when we will have to cancel several games and perhaps the season. And then our fans and our partners will have every right to demand their money back. At that moment, our financial crisis will become very real and very big. The spirit and substance of our ask to the federal government has been obscured somewhat by the power of a headline, something I'm sure all of you in public life are very familiar with. We have told the federal government we need $30 million in working capital this summer to keep operating and keep as many people employed as possible. It is very challenging to be precise on what additional help we might need because COVID-19 has literally created a world of uncertainty. Will we have games this fall or no season? What about 2021? Can we pack our stadiums then or not? One of our most famous Grey Cup games was called the Fog Bowl because the players couldn't make out what was in front of them. A friend of mine says we're all operating in a fog bowl right now. But we did our best to consider what might be ahead of us, and we estimated that we could need as much as an additional $120 million over the next 2 years, if the most negative scenarios, all of them, come true. But here is our bottom line. We want the support we need to get through this crisis and not a dime more. We support the decisions government have made, but their effects on our business is devastating. We just don't want it to be fatal. A ban on large gatherings means no revenue and no business for us. And we want to ensure it does not mean no CFL for the future. We want to earn this money and pay taxpayers back by delivering real value through a partnership with government. We can share our in-stadium, online, and broadcast assets so government can deliver important information. And we can build on our track record of service to the community. For example, we could expand the award-winning More Than a Bystander program we deliver with the Ending Violence Association in BC and train boys and men across the country about consent and respect for women. I don't mind telling you this is humbling, but the fact is we need support so we can be there for all the community groups that depend on us, so we can continue to deliver $1.2 billion in economic activity each year, so the CFL can continue to be one of those things that connects us as Canadians, something uniquely ours. Whenever it comes, we want our next Grey Cup, Canada's 108th, to be a place where we can all celebrate what we did to get through this and that Canada is back. And thank you very much.
Ambrosi faced a skeptical audience from the all-party committee. First, from BC NDP MP Peter Julian, who wondered why Ambrosi did not bring players.
I'm a big supporter of the CFL. I support the BC Lions, have supported other CFL teams too, and I've lived in other parts of the country and have had legislation, as you probably know, to support the CFL. But I'm a bit perplexed with your testimony today. Why are you not here today with representatives from the Players Association? Those are the world-class athletes, as you've said, that actually are the heart and soul of the CFL. What would they be saying if they were before the committee? And how much of the financial support that you're requesting would be going directly to the players of the CFL?
Well, you know, I'm here representing the CFL today and not representing the players. And yet I would tell you, I wake up every day thinking about those players and their families, as I do the league employees and our coaches and football operations people and our fans. So look, we're meeting with the players again tomorrow afternoon. It's Thursday today. We're meeting with them again tomorrow afternoon to talk about our approach to government and to see how we can work better together to approach government and have a conversation about how we protect this great league of ours. So that, you know, we expect to do that and to try to harmonize our thoughts. As for how much will go to players, we have to work that out. That's why we want a conversation with government. We want to talk about how we can work together. We know, for example, that our players and our alumni could be a potential solution in the healing of Canada. But we need to have we need to talk to the players about that. We need to talk to government about that, and then together work out a strategy. So our approach was that we just simply wanted government to know that we need help. The details of how it all comes together are yet to be decided, and that has to be done with our players, and it has to be done with the government as partners.
Kevin Waugh, a Conservative MP from Saskatoon, also chimed in.
So full disclosure here, 40 years as a sports broadcaster at CTV Saskatoon. I covered the Saskatchewan Roughriders for decades. I was involved in the early 70s when the club was near bankrupt. I took part in many telethons to keep the team floating. And in 2015, I became a member of parliament for Saskatoon Grasswood. So obviously, my first set of questions will go to the CFL Commissioner, Randy Ambrosi. Thank you, Randy, for testifying today in front of the Finance Committee. Unfortunately, some of your comments today have a lot of holes in them. First of all, is it a bailout that you're asking, or is it a loan that you're asking from the Government of Canada, the first $30 million?
Well, Minister Waugh, thank you very much. The answer to your question is what we're really looking for is a partnership with government. We're really anxious to sit down. And I should say, by the way, we've had a great conversation with your colleagues and various ministries. What we really want to do is sit down and talk about a way to work together so that we get through the crisis. But our fundamental position is that we are looking for financial support that we want to pay back to Canadians. If it's in the form of a loan, that perhaps we repay some of that loan back through programs. I think we're rather almost legendary, and our players are legendary for their ability to be in the communities and make a difference in the lives of children and young adults, our work in the northern communities. So essentially, what we want to do is sit down with government and build a partnership, one that will make sure that we're responsible Canadians to Canadians. We don't want to stand in front of other Canadians that have serious needs. So we're really looking for a business relationship and one
that
would be good for Canadians in the long run.
So what you're really looking for is gifts in kind, where you would be the league sports spokesman for several government agencies coming forth. I get that. It will be more or less the gifts in kind that would go along with this agreement if you do, in fact, get it from the federal government. I was surprised because there was no proposal when you brought this forward last month to the federal government. You didn't bring the Players Association on board. It was almost a proposal by Randy Ambrosi himself. Many of the teams in the CFL are doing very well. The community-owned teams in particular, where the Saskatchewan Roughriders made a profit of $1.5 million on their latest disclosure from 2018. Winnipeg, $2.6 million. Edmonton, $2.8 million. The rest are privately owned, as you know. Big, deep pockets from Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, a $4 billion organization. The Calgary Sports and Entertainment. You have Roger Greenberg, connected with the Ottawa franchise. You have Bob Young, David Braley. So really, Commissioner, there's a lot of public skepticism. When you came forward last month wanting partial bailout, we're going to call it, of $30 million, when many of your league teams right now are taking the Canadian Emergency Wage Subsidy, and that will total about $5 million, and it runs out next month. So, you know, the public and the media in itself, and I've seen a lot of comments in the last month, we are skeptical, because when you look at the deep pockets, I think the CFL myself, since I've covered them for over four decades, is the most stable that it has ever been. And yet you come out with a $30 million ask and another $120 million if the season doesn't go ahead. And yet, you know, we have the unemployment in Calgary at 8.6. We have businesses all across this country suffering. Yesterday, I did a newsletter where it was, and take this, you know, really seriously. The province of Saskatchewan bleeds green. We all know that. And I did a poll where it was overwhelmingly they did not want any support to the CFL. That coming from the best franchise that you have today. So how do you go about this today in front of the committee with your hands out for $30 million and maybe another $120 million? And I get it. Your league is driven by fans. The TSN deal certainly helps. But as you said, the advertisers and the TV deal, that is just money that you're going to have to pay back if the games aren't. So you've got about a minute left, if you don't mind, Commissioner. Just talk about how you can come to the committee today asking for the $30 million and then later maybe another $120 million.
We'll again, give you whatever time you need, Commissioner. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, look, I'd start by thanking you for your question. And I guess point out the fact is those numbers that you quoted as are related to our three community teams are only part of the CFL story. And of course, that those numbers, while they were positive in 2018, as you've referenced, are going to be dramatically different in 2020 as we face the very real scenario of a truncated season and then possibly a lost season completely. And the fact is that in the face of essentially a zero revenue model, all of our teams, including our community teams, are going to suffer significant losses that are going to be hard to recover from. You know, we have great strength in those community teams, but again, it's only part of the story because we've got private owners and corporate owners who have invested not for the sake of a great return, but have really invested in Canada and Canadian culture and Canadian sport. And I call them sports philanthropists, but there is a limit to the amount of support they're prepared to give, that their families are prepared to give. And the real issue is that this crisis is essentially going to quadruple or more the financial losses that our teams will take in a season that could potentially be lost altogether. So again, I want to be clear on behalf of my league and our owners, our board of governors, we are not looking for a handout. We're not. We're looking really for a partnership with government. We're looking for a solution. And we believe we can sit at the table and talk about a way to work together that'll get us through the crisis so that we can resume our activities working with our players as partners. And we've resumed our discussions with the players. We know we have work to do there. But ultimately, I think everyone that's associated with our league can agree on one thing. What everyone wants is for this league to survive.
Those were sounds from the May 7th House of Commons Finance Committee on the Breaker.News podcast. What do you think about the CFL's bailout request? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
Lots of toilet paper, but rare trips to the loo. Always hoarding was just wrong. What nervous people do. Seeing the world out my window, the right thing to do. Isolation's what I'm in. I got the COVID-19 blues. We should have thought ahead. First China, then Iran. This is my first pandemic. I'm doing all I can. I wash my hands with soap, water, sanitizer too. I douse myself in vodka just to spend some time with you.
The COVID-19 Blues by the Accutones. The voice of the Accutones is Richmond, BC lawyer Paul Doroshenko of Acumen Law. You can find his website, vancouvercriminallaw.com. The virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a person or group that is making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to all of those who worked to clear the Oppenheimer Park illegal camp. Yes, it was made illegal by Dr. Bonnie Henry's public health order. Let's hope the people that were living in the downtown Eastside Park get the help that they need. And The virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a person or group that is making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to all of those who worked to clear the Oppenheimer Park illegal camp. Yes, it was made illegal by Dr. Bonnie Henry's public health order. Let's hope that the people who lived in the downtown Eastside Park will get the help that they need and that their lives will improve. And that the baseball diamond at the park will be restored to the monument it should be to the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame inducted Asahi Japanese team. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
You gotta help your neighbors all across this land. And the frontline workers who fight to keep us safe. They are brave souls. I'm amazed, 'cause we're all in this together, and we've got to brave this stormy weather.
Burnaby City Councillor Joe Keithley of DOA and Mayor Mike Hurley with "We're All in This Together." That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 10th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on May 10th in 1970, 50 years ago, Bobby Orr scored one of the greatest goals in hockey history as the Boston Bruins beat the St. Louis Blues 4-3 in overtime to win the Stanley Cup? The photograph of the cup-winning goal is one of the greatest images in sport history. I can't show it to you for obvious reasons, but I can let you relive the moment.
Westfall rolled it in front. Sanderson tried a shot that was wide and Keenan cleared it, but not out. Bobby Orr behind the net to Sanderson. Orr! Bobby Orr! Scores in the Boston Bruins! Has won the Stanley Cup! Orr! Putting it in with the third goal! And what does that all mean by the Bruins? As Bobby Orr, their 22-year-old sensation.
Now you know. Send me your feedback and send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Playing us out is North Vancouver District Councillor Jordan Back and North Vancouver Lonsdale NDP MLA Bowen Ma with their COVID-19 version of John Denver's Take Me Home Country Road, recorded live outside the Evergreen House Seniors Home in North Vancouver on May 9th. Until next week.
All our elders gather around here, but because of COVID, we can't get too near. Days are lonely, lonelier than the nights, but we will get through this. We won't go without a fight. Can't wait to go to his home, where my grandpa, he lives alone. We will beat this COVID-19 and free our neighbors from their home. Wait to